Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Barbara Weisberg, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, spring has finally arrived in New York. What's your observation for the week?
Well, the observation was something that you said first, and we seem to have skipped the season. You know, had that bitter winter, wouldn't leave, and then we go straight into summer. There's like no spring, you know.
Yeah.
weather came. One of our friends in the UK brought a story to my attention a couple of days ago, and it's really quite incredible for those who may not be familiar with the story, and most likely you're not. There's a gentleman named Stuart Sharp, and who lives in the UK, and he had a kind of a traditional life. He got married early. He had a baby with his wife, and then when his wife was expecting another baby, things took an awful turn. He first, the contraction stopped. The doctor couldn't find the baby's heartbeat. There was an emergency delivery, and there were terrible complications. You know, the baby died, and his wife had some serious injuries, and she herself needed some major surgery. And he goes on to, you know, to tell how he was, you know, devastated, obviously. And he went to sleep one night soon after this. And he described a wonderfully comforting dream where all he could hear is music. The music just kept playing and playing in his mind. And it wasn't just a melody, but it was a symphony. And he could see the instruments. He could see the notes. He could. Know everything that's going on in this symphony. He could identify every instrument and every note, as he described. And he just didn't stop playing, and it just kept going on and on. And eventually he left his wife and child after she recovered, after about 6 months. And he just had this calling that somehow he would have to get this symphony played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. So what happened was he didn't have any money. He was destitute, and he was living on the streets and had no place to go and was begging for food. And one day a musician stopped him because he had managed to pick up an old guitar, and the guy saw him playing, and one thing led to another. It turned out the guy himself was a musician, took him under his wing. They laid down some basics, and then he gave him the bad news. Even though the music that he could now compose or repeat was extraordinary, it would take $1 million to be able to get it to the London Philharmonic, because there were so many things involved. There was studio time and composers and arrangements. And he then spent the next 15 years accumulating money. He took a business consultant, real estate, and after 15 years, he accumulated $1 million. He went and looked up this guy, and the guy was amazed that he had the money. To make a long story short, It was brought to the London Philharmonia Orchestra, and they played this symphony, which turned out to be incredible. So I know we've discussed that, and it's so interesting on so many different levels. What do you make of it? Do you think it was his son that gave him the symphony?
Do I think it was the son? No. But I think that the son's death focused him more focused him away from the physical world, which is what happens when you're in grief. Your attention is taken away from all of the things. And so he was open to receive this information from where he was supposed to. So if you buy into the fact that we're all here for a purpose, our arrivals here and our departures from here are all predetermined, then this infant's death played a key role in what this man now was going to go through in his life in order to have this experience.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because in doing some research, because I did invite him on the radio show and he'll be on a future date, is when he was confronted with that question, and our listeners could look him up, Stuart Sharp, on you'll find YouTubes and things of that nature. In one of the interviews, he said that he thought that the music, that the death of his son was a trigger that. He went on to say that he did hear music as a young child, you know, so this wasn't the first time.
Right, but again, during when you are a young child, and many young children have reported and their parents have reported that these children have experiences. And again, it's because you are not embedded in the physical world yet.
Yeah, and if you take him at his word, which there's no reason not to, He never had any musical ability. He had no musical talent. He can't read music, and yet to have an intricate symphony in your head that doesn't leave, it's similar to the stories that you hear about savants, right? I mean,
right.
You know, it's.
But this drove him to the point where he left his family, and it was years. It wasn't like, oops. You know, 6 months have gone by. Maybe this wasn't the right idea. Let me turn around and go back. He didn't. He persisted. Even living on the street, having no food, having no money, having nothing, he still felt this need to make this thing happen.
Right. And it's consistent with a lot of people that have these transformative experiences, whether it be a near-death experience or other types of experiences, where it takes over your life and changes it forever. And that takes precedence over everything. So in this case, it surely took precedence over all material things. Those no longer meant anything to him. So it is quite incredible. There is a scene in a little documentary that was made of when this was actually played, and you have all these world-class musicians, and when they're done, they all stand up and give the musicians give a standing ovation to him as the composer, because they knew his story. So it just shows you how incredible it was.
How they were moved by the story, perhaps not necessarily by the music itself.
Right.
But and I think for our listeners, this is an exciting story. This is an opportunity to listen to this gentleman when we do have him on the show, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to have loads of questions to ask this guy.
Right.
So we'll keep you posted with our emails on when we get him up and running and what show he's going to be on.
Okay, we're going to take a few minutes now to go to the people that help make this radio show possible, our sponsors, so stay with us and we'll be back in a few.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Barbara Weisberg. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research on Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
Before turning to writing full-time, Barbara Weisberg was a television producer, and among her many accomplishments, she was the creator of a show that some of our listeners may remember, Charles in Charge. So I remember my children watching that show. Barbara is a published poet. She studied under the tutelage of Allen Ginsberg. She's the author of several books, including the book we're going to be discussing tonight, Talking to the Dead, Kate and Maggie Fox and the Rise of Spiritualism. And she has a new released children's book called Space Creatures, and it's about the children's view of our wonderful universe. Both books are available on Amazon and on a link that members receive. And on our website. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
And pleased to have you. I mean, as I mentioned, I did read Talking to the Dead. It is a fascinating book. You know, what I wanted to ask you, today when people hear the term medium, like they conjure up an image of perhaps a personality they've seen on TV, a lot of people are not aware of a rich history of mediumship, or that there are even various types of communication. So when you think back, before you started doing the research for this book, what were your feelings toward people who claim to be able to talk to the dead?
I don't know that I had any kinds of really firm ideas on this subject matter. I'd had people I loved who passed away, and various feelings about that, but it was really coming across this particular family that got me involved in the subject matter of medium. The Fox family, as you know from reading the book, were a family in the mid-19th century whose two of whose teenage daughters said that they could communicate with spirits, and they began to hear rats, and the household began to have rats, and this little local phenomenon, which happened in upstate New York, became an international sensation, and to some extent created the spiritualist movement as a popular movement, something everyone was interested in the 19th century in the United States and really across Europe and parts of Asia. So my sense of what a medium was, what a medium was capable of, was really shaped by my research in the book, although, as I said, I myself had people die and had certain feelings about remaining connected to the people that I loved who had passed.
Mm. Why don't you... You mentioned, Kate and Maggie and these raps and these knockings. So tell us a little bit about where they were thought to come from in that Hydesville home.
There was a story to these raps. I think I should probably say that the notion of rapping spirits was not new. Even John Wesley's family had heard rapping spirits. But when these two teenage girls said that they were hearing raps, and then the raps occurred, they seemed to be surrounding this family. It was a mother, a father, and these two teenagers in this small rural house. There were other children in the family, but they were grown and had moved away. And the father went to find a neighbor to say, we have these rats in the house and we don't know what they are. And the neighbors began to come and visit. And the neighbors could hear these sounds as well. But what was new, what was actually really shocking to them, was that these were not just raps. These raps seemed to come from a sentient being, from an aware and communicative soul. When the neighbors came into the house and started to ask questions, the raps would answer with one rap for yes and two raps for no, or they would count if someone asked, what is my age? The raps would actually count. What they said, they actually associated the raps with a person. The story was that a peddler had visited the house not long before the Fox family moved in, and that this peddler, whose name was Charles Rosner, had been murdered in a very bloody way. His throat had been cut, and he'd been dragged down the stairs and buried in the cellar. So initially, it was assumed that the raps were being made by the ghost of Charles Rosner.
And as you read in history and in your book, you know, the times were a little bit different, or maybe not all that much different than they are today. It drew a lot of criticism and angry people who gathered around the house because people with religious convictions thought that perhaps this was the devil's work, or you know, you're not supposed to communicate with the dead. So, that was a challenge for the sisters, wasn't it?
It was indeed. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, communication with the dead or with otherworldly beings was something that was supposedly only happened in the long ago, in the time of miracles. You weren't supposed to be able to communicate with the dead in this day and age. And if you did, it was considered possession, that it was a demon that was communicating with you, or that whoever was summoning the dead was a witch. The notion that everyone's immortal spirit, in fact, survives death, and that everyone's immortal spirit is capable of communicating after death through the agency of a medium, and that a communicating spirit wasn't a demon, it wasn't necessarily dangerous, though it could be mischievous, that these spirits often came to help the people they loved, to take care of the people they loved. That notion really didn't exist before you had the birth of spiritualism in the 1840s, because people did believe it was demonic possession. So these poor little girls, Kate was 11 and Maggie was 14, and people called them witches, people threw things at them, people said that if they stayed in the area, they would kill them. A mob arrived at the house with guns, and there were times when it was very, very dangerous for these children. And what happened was the children, Kate, 11-year-old Kate, and 14-year-old Maggie, had a much older sister named Leah, who lived not too far away from them. The children lived in Hydesville, New York, the rural community I've mentioned. And Leah lived in Rochester, New York, which was relatively close to them. And Leah found out, she read in a newspaper article, that the little hamlet of Hydesville was being literally shaken by strange rats. And then she read that it was her family, her own sisters, who were either accused of making the rats themselves as frauds, or were witches, or, the idea is beginning to form, were mediums to bring the dead to the people who loved them and wanted to communicate with them. So Leah went down to Hydesville, essentially, to help rescue her little sisters. Leah was also quite an entrepreneur, so in addition to wanting to rescue her little sisters, she also saw an opportunity to perhaps make them and herself famous. But she went to Hydesville, she brought the sisters back to Rochester, and Rochester at the time was a fabulously interesting city. Was a home. This was a time of revolutionary fervor in the United States. It was at the time of abolition, women's suffrage, and Rochester was really a center for exciting new political and even religious ideas. So instead of being ostracized, the two little girls, Maggie and Kate, were welcomed. People were fascinated by them, and people began to want to attend sessions with them. They began to want to hear the raps, and not only hear the raps, to hear what the raps were communicating to them about their own loved ones, about the people they themselves had lost. So when the people in Rochester were brilliant people. I mean, heads of universities and newspaper journalists and writers. So at that point, spiritualism really began to acquire a wide and diverse following.
Mm. So the today there's pretty, what I would term an explosion, in mediumship, practitioners, throughout the world. And what was a bit surprising, and I learned from reading your book, is that there was also an explosion of sorts in spiritualism that was sweeping the country. I mean, there were it was estimated that maybe there were actually millions of followers, and relatively small cities were boasting having 1,000 or 2,000 mediums in them. So I never realized that spiritualism was that strong. And I wonder today, do you think that mediumship is more popular today than it was then, or was it more, or is it the opposite?
I think today, you're right, Bob. There, after spiritualism began to take off, when the Fox sisters became cultural celebrities, more and more mediums stepped forward and said they could communicate with the dead, so that you might have mediums in every small town. I am not sure that today you necessarily have the number of mediums that you had back then. What I think you probably have today is prominence for the mediums who do come forward. They're well known because they have best-selling books or because they're featured in television programs. So they have a certain kind of prominence that they did not have back then.
I'm sorry. I wanted to get back to the wrappings that were purported to come from the peddler in the home. Isn't it true that from the information that was communicated supposedly from this peddler that they actually dug up the basement and found bones there?
Many, many years after the initial wrappings, which occurred in 1848, bones were discovered. When the wraps first occurred, people went down into the basement and dug and looked around, and they could not find evidence of a body at that time. In the early 1900s, people went back to the site and looked around, and they uncovered not only a few bones, but they also uncovered a tin box that looked very much like the kind of battered boxes that a peddler would have carried with him in the mid-19th century. So it was assumed, given the box and the bones, that these were the remnants of Charles Rosna, who had been buried in the basement and whose remains just had not been discovered at the time. And I believe that the peddler's box, the tin box, today is housed in the museum at Lilydale, which is, as you undoubtedly know, a wonderful spiritualist community in Western New York. with many mediums living there and spiritualists, and where, you know, sessions are held all the time, both for individuals and for groups.
Yeah.
It's quite an extraordinary place.
Yeah, it is. And you know, my favorite story in the book, Talking to the Dead, and we are talking with Barbara Weisberg, and the book is called Talking to the Dead, Kate and Maggie Fox and the Rise of Spiritualism. Do you recall the account that was given by the Reverend Jervis with his house guest, Picard?
At the moment, I don't.
Okay, let me refresh your memory on that. I mean, Reverend Jervis, attended seances, and he had a house guest staying with him named Picard, and they went to a seance, and Picard was given the information, supposedly from spirit, that his son was dead. And then he immediately left and went back home, and this all took place, I should mention, at the same time that the Morse code and the telegraph, you know, was invented, and as it turned out, this Picard's son did indeed die, and he sent a telegram arrived at the house that evening, informing them of the son's death. So the quote was from this Reverend Jervis: "God's telegraph has outdone Morse's altogether." So, which was pretty insightful. So maybe we can communicate through means that aren't material, you know, through intuitive means. So I know that you must have been excited when you uncovered things like that, which brings me to the point which I mentioned to you briefly before we went on air. There's so much information. How do you go about doing this kind of research to uncover things like that? I know you went to libraries. Did you also interview people? I mean, did you consult history books? I mean, how does one go about accumulating this information?
Very slowly. And I will tell you, one of my favorite stories is that I came upon letters by Harriet Beecher Stowe talking about seances that she and her husband participated in with Kate Fox when Kate was a woman, when Kate was in her 40s. And Harriet Beecher Stowe, her husband was a huge, heavy man, and she talks about the table being lifted up and caviled and with it and just hurled across the room. The spirits were so powerful. The finding of the research is exciting. It's like being a detective. You talk to people, you find one source of information, and that leads to another source of information. And now, with the technology we have available, so much of it is on the Internet, but you still have to be a detective. You still have to know what you're looking for and intuitively follow the clues to take you where you want to go.
Yeah, I see the results, and I know from reading, and it's so comprehensive that it had to take years of effort. We are going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to ask you about, the pressures that the girls, face, the decision to go, public, and the subsequent problems that they had at the end of their careers, even the admitting, some fraud. So if we can continue that after the break, that would be great. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Barbara Weisberg. Our sponsor is the WindBridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Let's get serious about this annual afterlife exploration retreat we're having in Chester, Connecticut, July 24th through 26th. Since May is here now and the early bird pricing ends on May 31st, you have to hurry and gather up your best friends forever and have a blast in a quad, triple, or double room. Or if you like your privacy, reserve a single. All rooms have air conditioning and a full private bathroom. And we have a packed schedule of happenings, including spoon bending, spirit communication, and scrying, just to mention a few. There are a few seats left to our May webinar, Taking Physical Mediumship Seriously with Dr. Stephen Browdy. He's a fabulous presenter, and this will be an extremely interesting topic. If you're a medium or studying to become one, this is a topic you really need to learn about. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all the event links, information, and registration. And please, 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 when you are on our website, click on that donate button and send in the most generous contribution you can. This radio show, the newsletter, the website, and all the other wonderful things Forever Family Foundation provides depend on the support of our listeners and our members, as the work we do does not get us grants and support that other not-for-profits operate on. And speaking of donations, when you are shopping on the Internet, even for the smallest item, please keep Forever Family Foundation in mind. By doing one simple task when you shop, you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon.com using any of the Amazon links or book links on our Forever Family Foundation website, take you to the Amazon site, and that is the only step you need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iKiv.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. It's free, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. And once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Adidas, the Apple Store, Cheap Tickets, or Hanes, Old Navy, or Zales. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And finally, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Barbara Weisberg. The book we're speaking about is Talking to the Dead, Kate and Maggie Fox and the Rise of Spiritualism. Barbara, when, before the break I mentioned, let's get into a little bit of, obviously the sisters must have been deprived of adolescence to a certain extent. They became well-known celebrities. They had tremendous pressure. They were investigated intrusively. What effect did this have on the girl? It must have taken a toll.
Oh, it took a terrible toll on them. They had a very dramatic and ultimately tragic life because they were required to perform mediumship in front of huge audiences, and they were tested in ways that were so inappropriate. And at any time, and particularly in the middle of the 19th century, men would hold them down so that they couldn't move to be sure that they weren't doing the raps themselves, or they were taken into rooms by committees of women and strip searched. And they were on the road all the time giving demonstrations, as well as trying to help people reach the loved ones they had lost. Now, these two remarkable adolescents came from a family in which the father was a recovered alcoholic. They were also being courted by all sorts of rich people who would invite them to parties and celebrate them by giving them champagne. So by the time these young women were in their 20s, they were drinking very heavily, and it really took a terrible, terrible toll on them. Their older sister, Leah, tried to protect them, tried to help them stay sober, but it was very difficult. And actually, there's a complex relationship between intoxicants and mediums anyway, in many cultures. And, you know, it both releases inhibitions and... So anyway, these poor young women managed to continue a life of mediumship for some 40 years. However, part of that time they were penniless and in despair and going in and out of sobriety. In the end of their lives, because they had no money, Maggie, the older of the two, was now, I believe, in her early 60s, put together a huge assembly in New York, and she came out on stage and she said, I am here to tell you that this whole thing has been a fraud from beginning to end. We've never been true mediums. We did the whole thing by cracking our toe joints. Now, it's kind of clear that cracking your toe joints isn't going to be heard throughout an entire auditorium. Nevertheless, that's what she claimed. She subsequently said, I said those things because I thought if I could no longer make money as a medium, maybe I could make money by exposing spiritualism. I have to live. And before she died, she totally recanted that confession and said that, in fact, she and Kate had been in communication with the spirits from the time they were very young children, little girls in this rural farm community in New York. And then they skyrocketed to fame and suffered the consequences of that celebrity.
Mm. So. It's not unlike, you know, celebrities that aren't mediums, you know, or rock stars. You know, they go from relative obscure, sheltered lives to massive fame and public appearances, and a great majority of them can't handle it, you know, and have oil. We read about it in the paper every day. And they were rock stars in the mediumship world, weren't they?
Exactly. But they helped, Kate and Maggie really helped create a climate in which people could really begin to believe that the people they loved who had passed over could remain close, could communicate with them, that communication with those who had passed wasn't necessarily a demonic phenomena, but in fact was a natural occurrence in the world. And that was something that has continued to influence us right up to the present day, I think.
I think you're right, and you know, a lot of today's mediums probably would not be able to do what they do if it weren't for, you know, the Fox sisters and others, you know, who paved the way. I know that you contemplated the reasons why so many people were attracted to these public demonstrations and to the seances. Was it purely an effort to communicate with loved ones that were deceased, or do you think there were other, like, social or cultural reasons for it?
The mid-19th century was an extraordinary time of enormous innovation and change. So, as you mentioned before, the telegraph was invented. Railroads were new, so people were on the road. There was tremendous mobility across the country. There were scientific discoveries being made. Dinosaurs were discovered. The planet Neptune was discovered. Everything seemed possible. Everything seemed new. But at the same time, some of the science, some of the innovations, were beginning to undermine conventional religious belief. And that was very scary. Hell was certainly scary, But it was even more scary to begin to think science is taking away some of the beliefs that are a foundation of our Bible. What if none of it is true? And as people began to question traditional religious beliefs, they began to believe in new concepts, including that perhaps there was not such a thing as hell, that when we died, we went through transitions and became better and better and better, rather than being consigned to purgatory or to hell. So that even an evil murderer wouldn't go to hell. An evil murderer would not instantly have a wonderful afterlife. You remain initially the self that you were in life, but you pass through stages, and even someone who is evil in the afterlife would get better and better and better. So you had religious beliefs being questioned. You had enormous technological changes. You had tremendous political and social change, with slavery being questioned finally and women's place being questioned finally. So political upheaval, social upheaval, technological change, religious questioning. It was a time of tremendous ferment, and people were reaching out. Here's one more thing. Children died. The infant mortality rate, really until you hit almost the first third of the 20th century, was shocking. If you had a child, I think there was, I don't remember, but maybe it was 1 in 5 survived. I actually don't know the statistics. I don't remember them. But people lost people. You could get a cut and die from the infection. So life was really fragile, and you really, really wanted a connection with the people that you lost. And you also wanted to know that you would be safe, that if something happened to you, you weren't going to be sent to eternal damnation, that you had something waiting for you in the afterlife that would not be eternal torment.
I think you've hit everything right on the head, you know, and some of those reasons still hold true today. You know, there's so much turmoil and in the world, and the wars and the natural disasters that seem to be at an increasing pace, and people are searching for meaning and understanding and trying to make sense out of the chaos. So I don't know that things have changed all that much over the years. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our time. I want to mention again that we have talked with Barbara Weisberg, the book Talking to the Dead, Kate and Maggie Fox and the Rise of Spiritualism. It's a wonderful book. I recommend it highly. You'll learn not only a great deal about spiritualism and mediumship, but about history, because it's all mixed together. And also, I'd like to mention Barbara's new book, Space Creatures. It's also a wonderful children's book, and it gives a view of the universe. Barbara, thanks so much for being with us, and we hope that you'll join us again.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
I enjoyed being on the program very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Scott Calzia, Donald Peterson, Judy Purnick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Miriam Pierzga, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Vicki Steffi, Joan Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Renata Santarelli, Lynn LeClaire, Joe, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Muling, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lafada, Wendy Lippo, Doug Berry, Philip McPhee, Eric and Betty. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.